And you're listening to Unusual Sources here on 93.3 CFMU FM, broadcasting to Hamilton at 93.3 on the FM dial and the rest of the world at cfmu.mcmaster.ca, our online streaming service. Very pleased to say today that we're bringing Rick Sterling on the program today. He's been a guest on our program before, talking about a number of topics. Rick is a retired engineer with a current focus on international issues, but he's also been following the Bernie Sanders campaign there in the United States. So, Rick, thanks very much for being on the program with us today.
Happy to be here, Brendan.
Well, I think that you have a following now on Counterpunch, Consortium News, and Taylor Report, and Unusual Sources, and other programs. That you've been doing a lot of good work as an activist, and also just getting the information out about Syria and the Syria Solidarity Movement. But, you know, living in the United States, you have to be very aware of what's happening politically. And I know you've written about three articles or so that have made it to Counterpunch on the subject of the Bernie Sanders campaign. I caught a few of them, and the one most recently, I think it was May 20th, was called Bernie Comes to Vallejo. And you witnessed one of the Bernie rallies that I've seen coverage of and photos of on the internet. So I'm glad you can give us some perspective on this. We want to follow that campaign. I think it's very significant. And you were at this rally, so I'm just wondering if you could. We can start out by looking at this recent event. There seemed to be a fairly good-sized rally. I mean, how big was this rally?
The one in Vallejo, which is a small city. It's in the general San Francisco Bay Area, but it's a relatively poor town. It's not very big. It's maybe it's 50,000 or 60,000 people. There were 10,000 people at the rally. And a lot of the people came out, they learned about it that day or the day before. So, and I myself only learned of it the day of the event. So that was pretty amazing. And I found it fascinating to go there. And basically they had a large grass field along the estuary, fenced off. And so everybody had to go through security screening. They had about 10 security screening reception areas where it wasn't as quite as strict as going to the airport, but it was, you know, that gives you a sense. And the line to go into the screening was was at least half a mile long. And so it was fascinating to be in the line. I had some information to pass out, and I started up conversations with various people in line, so it was fascinating to learn why they were there. A lot of young people, I'd say the majority were young, under 25 or 30, but it was very mixed ethnically. Vallejo Vallejo filed for default. The city filed default a few years ago. They've had their economic hardships. It's not a wealthy community at all. It's more of a working class community, and so the audience was a lot of young people. There was a real vibe in the air, actually. The high spirits the speech, the guy who does the Young Turks video program introduced Bernie. Before that, there was an African-American woman who's an activist in Oakland, and then there was Jane Kim, who's a supervisor in San Francisco, and then there was a registered nurse, one of the leaders in the National Nurses Union, which is a very progressive union that has come out explicitly for Bernie. They all spoke, and then Sanders came up, and it was, it was really uplifting, really positive spirit, and the crowd, the crowd was crazy.
Yeah,
so it was a fun event.
he's definitely been able to draw some crowds. I've seen photos of him filling up entire stadiums or football fields. And I mean, in comparison to the Clinton campaign, sometimes she goes to a city and barely can fill a room, if that. You know, there's a massive grassroots sentiment in support of Bernie. And as you pointed out, it's a surprisingly or perhaps unsurprisingly blue collar in many respects, and multi-ethnic. You know, there's a lot of people. Ironically, it's been pointed out in this campaign that one of the most elderly candidates that's been fielded in recent years has attracted the support of so many youth.
Exactly.
Just like
That is one of the ironies. Yeah, Bernie's 74. Well, none of them are kids. Hillary is 68. Trump is 69. Bernie's 74, and Jill Stein is 66. So there's no kids in the crowd. But yes, Bernie, I've got a couple of 30-something-year-old kids myself, and so I've talked to them, and my daughter's a school psychologist, so she's got her finger of the pulse of among high school students and the youth, and she was saying Bernie's really cool now, so that's kind of interesting. I asked some people that as we were waiting in line and moving forward, which took about maybe 45 minutes. Ordinarily, it's no fun standing in line and inching forward, but this was different, really. Everybody was upbeat. Everybody knew they were going to something special. And in talking with people, a young African American, a couple of African American women were standing behind us. They knew right off the bat why they were voting for Bernie. They didn't hesitate. They didn't miss a beat. They said the guy's genuine. He's going to be good for. He's going to be. The nation needs something like this, something really different and something with sincerity. Another young man that I talked with, a Hispanic kid, he said Bernie will be good for the working class.
So he used the word working class.
Exactly. Yeah, and that caught my attention. And it was a working class. Largely working class group of people there, actually, but it was very positive, and he has been doing this all over. 2 days ago on Monday, he was in Oakland, and the police estimate was 30,000 people. He's really captivated the imagination. Now, the first article that I wrote was back two or three months ago, was should progressives support Bernie? Because through my discussions with various compañeros and people I work with, I know there's criticisms of Bernie, but it was becoming really obvious. And if somebody listens to his speech on mainstream TV, the guy's got a class analysis, and he's singling out Wall Street. Now, his position on foreign policy isn't what I would like to see, but it's a qualitative improvement over Hillary Clinton, who is basically a hawk, and Donald Trump. You couldn't trust him further than you can throw him. He says one thing one day that sounds not bad at all, but the next day he'll reverse it. So he's completely unreliable. Bernie Sanders. He's calling for he's saying the U.S. has to break its lockstep international policy with Israel. He's saying that we need to end the regime change policy. That's huge. He's saying we have to work with Russia. So I think even on foreign policy, where he's not as outspoken or as good as many progressives would like, even there is a qualitative difference between him and the other candidates who have a real shot at it.
Yeah, I would say that, you have two phenomena happening here. One of them is he certainly has galvanized and energized a lot of voters and people who had not been participating in the process because they had felt so disenfranchised. On the other hand, he's been the recipient of criticism from both the left and the right, not, and I don't mean the far right. I I just mean, in terms of the Democratic Party establishment seems to be doing everything they can to stop his campaign. And from the left, the radical left, there has been a great deal of skepticism, as you point out, about Bernie. And starting there, I mean, I certainly can't blame anyone for being skeptical. Look at the Obama administration. People had such high hopes coming in with Obama, and he was presented as a community organizer and someone who's going to bring great change and hope. But 8 years later, you know, it looks like the Bush 3 or Clinton 3 administration with the continuation of the war in Iraq and Afghanistan and, you know, Guantanamo hasn't been closed, all of these things. And nothing was done about Wall Street after the recession crisis, the bank crisis, the bailouts and all that. So, I mean, I think people got burned pretty bad with Obama. And so the next time a left-wing candidate or someone that's being presented as left comes along, people are feeling quite afraid. You mentioned the sheepdog theory, which has come out of Black Agenda Report and other publications, in which maybe there's this idea that the Democratic Party establishment might be hoping to use Bernie as a sheepdog to keep people inside the Democrat orbit, even if they don't like Hillary Clinton. What are your feelings on that?
Well, if you'd asked me last summer, I would have said, you know, that sounds kind of reasonable, that having a kind of a semi-progressive candidate in the field can be good for the Democratic Party. It can kind of keep those people in the, you know, in the corral, so to speak, and help to prevent them from drifting over to the Green Party or Peace and Freedom or something like that. But I think time has proven that theory to be profoundly mistaken. And I'm somewhat critical of leftists who refuse to change their opinions in the face of reality. It's glaringly obvious that Bernie Sanders he's not only educated a lot of people about, and in a fairly simple but clear analysis, that Wall Street is a major part of the problem, but he has shown to the Democratic Party establishment and the whole U.S. and the world, for that matter, that there's a huge groundswell of support for that kind of a position. So I think the sheepdog people, Bruce Dixon and the people, I mean, I have a lot of respect for Black Agenda Report. They do a lot of great work. But I think when reality, I think you have to look at reality, and there's, just because something happened in the past doesn't mean it's going to happen the same way in the future. I think it's very short-sighted not to see the positive potential that exists now with Sanders. Now, even assuming that if Hillary Clinton takes the nomination, and I think Bernie Sanders is a man of his word. I think he'll, you know, kind of go along with the Democratic Party. But he has said himself that he's not, this isn't an orchestra, and he's the conductor, and everybody follows him. And he said it's up to Hillary Clinton to win over the people. So he's putting the onus on her. Well, if you want these people who supported me to come to you, you have to give them a reason to. So I think even on that ground, it's important to look at, you know, to look at the reality versus something that happened in the past.
Well, I think we'll have the opportunity to sort of assess and evaluate reality. And we'll see as this campaign goes, if Bernie has to drop out and hand it over to Hillary, you know, will his supporters go over to her? Will a sheepdog kind of plan work? We'll see. As you point out, there's something odd going on the ground that it's hard to see if you're looking at it from far away or from above. And that is, this campaign really has galvanized a lot of people along traditionally left-wing ideas that hadn't been heard for a long time. So, when Bernie gets up there and he says, you know, yeah, the Wall Street has organized the economy in a way to benefit them, and they control a great deal of what happens in Washington, the political class. So, you know, and ordinary people don't really have a voice because structurally they're not represented, and therefore Americans are getting poorer as a result of policies that are pursued on behalf of a 1%. It's kind of like part of Occupy has streamed into this campaign. We know that Occupy did stream into other campaigns, Fight for 15, you know, the labor movement after Occupy disintegrated. So there are a lot of Americans on the ground who genuinely want change and are realizing that a lot of the problems in their life are caused by the imbalance in the economy, the class structure in the United States. And Bernie has been giving a voice to that. So that's very important. That really is happening. I think at the very least, we're looking at the education of a lot of Americans. They're getting a sort of political education by participating in this campaign, one way or the other, no matter how it goes. We'll see what they learn. Now, he's got a tough fight from the Democratic Party itself, because they've been putting so much pressure on that campaign. Now, you contrast Bernie to Hillary. You know, in terms of foreign policy, although we would find Sanders lacking in quite a number of areas, when you compare him to Hillary Clinton, you see something of an important difference. And that is, Clinton, I don't think there's ever been a war she didn't like or didn't support. You know, I mean, you know, in terms of foreign policy, I mean, she's one of the architects of what happened in Libya. She cheered that on mightily. She's a big friend of Samantha Power and responsibility to protect. They want to pump up interventions all over the world and, you know, just get rid of international law. I think, you know, Hillary Clinton, it's hard to say with Trump or Clinton who is the most dangerous candidate to the United States and the world. Clinton has a proven track record of being dangerous, which, you know, is what she calls her experience, right?
Correct. Yeah, that's right. Her experience, some people think that's good. You know, if one looks at it critically, and you just listed some of the examples, some of the good examples, it's consistently bad. Hillary, if one reads her book, Hard Choices, there's a lot of interesting revelations in there. She's a big proponent of what she calls civil society. That's civil with a capital C. What that really boils down to is U.S.-funded training of young people in other countries with governments the U.S. does not like. So she proudly talks about training 5,000 activists and independent journalists. Well, if they're funded, supplied with equipment, and paid salaries by the U.S., how independent are they? She talks about training 1,000 for Syria. So now these are the people that we've heard a lot of reports from, according to activists. How many times have we heard that on the news, according to activists on the ground? And then I'm sure there's at least another 1,000 or 2,000 in Venezuela. So she installed Victoria Nuland in the State Department. Nuland is the wife of Robert Kagan, who is one of the principal neocons, and Victoria Nuland was the architect of the coup in the Ukraine. She was kind of the mastermind behind the scenes. In Honduras, Hillary Clinton was in Honduras 3.5 weeks before the coup happened in June of 2009. She makes her negative impression of the president of the progressive president of Venezuela, Manuel Zelaya. She makes her negative opinions of him clear in her book. And I believe she is the one who gave the green light. This was early on in the Obama administration. So I believe Hillary Clinton was the official who gave the green light. Honduras has a U.S. military base. It's the only U.S. military base in Central America. And Honduras is very closely connected economically and militarily to the U.S. They would not have done a coup there without a green light from the U.S., and I think Hillary Clinton was the one who did that.
Well, I think basically we know already what Hillary Clinton's foreign policy would look like, because yeah, we've already seen it over the last 8 years, and it involves a number of coup d'etats. It involves funding groups, democracy promotion groups, as they call it, all over the place, which get themselves involved in regime change operations and things like that. It involves military actions against countries like Libya. It involves illegal military action against Syria. Yeah, as I say, there's no war she hasn't approved of vigorously. She's basically the candidate for Wall Street and the Pentagon, you know, and Wall Street and the Pentagon understand that, and they back her. So, I mean, that's the other issue with this war inside the Democratic Party, because, I mean, they had sort of already selected Hillary at the outset. At least it seemed that way, and it still kind of does. You had mentioned that there's a lot of people that are viewed as liberal columnists or left-wing commentators And when a Republican is in office, they seem like they might be saying some okay things. They seem kind of left, like Paul Krugman, and they might have said, well, I don't like what Bush is doing. And you think, oh, that's okay. But then when it comes around to the Clinton versus Sanders campaign, you have these people, these liberal voices. And, you know, in the case of Krugman, they came out viciously attacking Sanders and his supporters. So
Krugman, it was pretty astounding. It was so so bare and brazen, and I mean, he questioned the morals of Bernie Sanders. He questioned whether he has any substance to his plan. He questioned whether the supporters of Bernie weren't like Bernie bros who don't have any clue about policy. And I've looked into this, and I've compared the details of the policies of Hillary Clinton with Bernie Sanders. And Bernie Sanders' plans are more detailed than Hillary Clinton's. You can go to their websites. Anybody can go to their websites and look up and see how they're going to pay for their proposals, how they're going to implement them. And Sanders has more detail than Clinton, even though his plans are much bolder, whether it's regarding climate change or whether it's providing a massive support for higher education. He's got a lot of details in his plan. So Krugman's attack there is just flat out false.
Yeah, and I mean, the whole liberal commentariat, you know, it reveals what kind of circles they travel in, that they're all attacking not only Bernie, but his supporters, who are students, invisible minorities, working class people. They're being called lazy and shiftless, and you know, they don't know what they're doing in their life. And then the slur that's come up, Bernie bros, which is particularly hilarious. They imply Hillary Clinton's supporters imply that Bernie Sanders supporters online are a bunch of arrogant, aggressive men who come on the internet and terrorize people.
I guess it was about 2 weeks ago. There were reports about in Nevada where the meeting of Democrats was being shut down, and the chairperson of the conference was basically stealing candidates from Sanders, and then stopped the meeting. And then the story came out that very upset members of the party were throwing chairs. That turned out to be flat out false. Nobody threw a chair, and the story was basically cooked up. But going back to what you were saying about Wall Street and the comparison to Obama, there's a real major difference between Obama and Sanders. Obama was supported by Wall Street. He was supported verbally. He was supported financially. He was buddies with the key people on Wall Street. Sanders is the enemy of Wall Street. They don't like him one bit, and they're pouring money into Clinton's campaign. And also, Obama's foreign policy advisors were from the military establishment complex. So it was a very smooth sales job, basically. And Obama's he is an excellent salesman. He's not as hawkish as Hillary Clinton. He restrained her, actually, from he decided not to attack Syria when in 2013, much to the chagrin of Hillary Clinton and other hawks in the administration. That said, he's allowed the war against Syria, the aggression against Syria, to carry on, and he hasn't done anything to stop it. But Hillary is a good deal worse. But there's a significant difference between Sanders and Obama. Sanders is not a friend of Wall Street. There's no secret deal going on there, and it shows in where their funding is going. Sanders really has. It's true. In fact, I was with friends the other day, and one of my friends was saying, for the first time ever, he's donating to a candidate's campaign, and of course, that's Bernie Sanders.
Yes. However this goes with the Sanders campaign, I think one thing that's clear is people are tired of the political establishment and the sort of dominance of the political center, or the so-called center, in the United States. So Trump is edging in from the right. Sanders is edging in from the left. And what they both have in common is a lot of people have lost their livelihoods, and a lot of people have been negatively affected by globalization, you know, that great sucking sound when all the U.S. jobs, or a lot of industrial jobs and other types of jobs are offshored. Automation gets rid of other jobs, and people are given no solutions. Clinton and Obama come up there and put on all this feel-good stuff, and they might put on sunglasses, say, we're cool, whatever, but it doesn't change the fact that people have lost their livelihoods.
Mm-hmm. Right, exactly. Well, I think it's an earthquake going on in the Democratic Party, because it's really exposed the rift between the establishment, which is connected to Wall Street, which has a right-wing foreign policy very closely tied to Israel, and an opposition that is much more closely tied to grassroots communities, to working class, and which is questioning, why do we have this lockstep policy with Israel? And which is questioning it's just one war after another. So it's an earthquake in the Democratic Party. So the idea that, I mean, history over the last, 12 months, or the last 9 months anyway, has really shown that Bernie Sanders has revealed something that nobody could have predicted, really. Nobody that I know of did predict. And that's that there is a real groundswell of opposition in the U.S. to the way things are. And it's a progressive groundswell.
That's right. The media has given so much attention to Trump, but there is a progressive groundswell as well, which the media would prefer to ignore. So thanks very much for bringing our attention to that. And we'll see how this goes. I'll look forward to more articles and debate and discussion on this. It should be interesting. I read Black Agenda Report all the time. I read Counterpunch all the time. And so we'll get to see how this discussion continues. So, Rick, thanks so much for being on the program with us today. And again, we'll be looking forward to your commentary in the future.
Okay. All right. Thanks very much.
Thanks, Rick. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
And that was Rick Sterling. And he, as I said earlier, is a retired engineer. He's actually from Canada, from British Columbia. He calls himself a defector, a traitor, because he lives, I think, on the west coast of the U.S. He's a retired engineer that is spending his time now on anti-war activity. And that's how we know Rick. He does a lot of work with the Syria Solidarity Movement. But he also follows the Sanders campaign. I mean, it's not like foreign policy and domestic policy are unrelated in the United States or anywhere. And the Sanders campaign has things to teach us.